Hello, and welcome to the monthly comic spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be talking about some of the comics we got this month. We'll start with DC, we'll go over to Marvel, and then we'll cover the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll cover general plot points and storylines of the comics we discuss. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in August 2023. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. This was a weird month for me.
Weird? Weird in what way?
It's the first time I have done monthly shipping.
Oh, okay. All right. That explains it.
So, like, ever?
Ever in the history of getting shipments.
The only other time I would go any extended period where I get my comic was like if I was on an extended business trip or something like that.
Wow. So how did that work for you, getting that big bulk of stuff all at once?
Well, first, it was weird after that first week. I'm like, geez, I haven't gotten that email from Eric. What's going on with that? It's a little late. And it's getting to be about Thursday or whatever. And then it finally dawns on me, wait, this might be the month I've switched over. So I was a little slow on the uptake there.
That's funny.
And then I'd been kind of going through the shipping list, kind of, well, what am I expecting every week? How big of a month's it going to be? That sort of deal. And in the process of that, I'd realized, oh, there was a few things that had either gotten damaged or I'd forgotten the order, it was late, or, you know, whatever. But then the box comes, and it was a heavy box. And I've actually recorded the unboxing and the inventorying of that. I just haven't edited that. Again, slam for time. So that may go up, I don't know, later.
Okay.
It was weird because it's just trying to figure out, okay, I got a total of 54 new comics this month, but I had a total of 64 in the box, plus a manga, a RPG, a role-playing game, and a book.
Wow.
It was a hefty amount, plus, you know, previews and all that stuff. So just trying to figure out, it's like, okay, I'm not going to be sitting here sorting this stack as I go, so I just pull up my Excel, and as I'm going, you know, say, oh, what's this, and checking it off as I go.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
So, I'm not going to say it was a good process. I'm going to say it's a process I used.
That works.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I got my weekly shipment as usual, so I read everything weekly, minus the time where we recorded the last monthly spotlight. I usually start mid-month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've just been crazy busy, so I have not, like, read everything for this month. But I picked and choose selectively, because there are a couple. It's like, I know I'm probably not going to talk about a few of these things. So I can put off reading those.
Yeah. It was another late month for you. Me, I'm at 67 comics, so not that far off from you.
I had 14 from DC, 22 from Marvel, 18 from the other publishers.
Okay. I should write that down because I don't ever do that. But it tells me when I filter my list how many I got. If I go to DC, I'll just tell you the DC first, then I'll tell you the others. 14 DC. Did you have 14 as well?
14, yeah.
Ah, look at that. We got the same number of DC. Nice.
Well, and it was a 5-week month, so I had a few weeks where I got like 4 or 5, and a few others where I got like 1 or 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens. And I got some stuff that I regret getting, which I know we'll talk about that when we get over there. But one of them is just because it was part of an event, and I forgot to cut it off, and you did.
Ah. Hey,
you know what I'm talking about, I think.
Not off the top of my head.
Batman.
Oh, yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, it was part of the Catwoman, Batman, whatever the hell they're doing with that. And so I picked up Issue 2 or Volume 2 of that story, and I'm like, what's going on? Oh yeah, I didn't want to read this.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of things that it's just, if I'm not getting everything in the event, I'm trying to make an intelligent decision of, am I getting enough for it to be worthwhile, or am I interested enough in the parts I am getting for it to be worthwhile? I wasn't liking Batman. I'm not getting Catwoman, so it's like, I decided not to bother.
Yeah, actually, that's the smart decision. You really didn't miss out, because I didn't want to read the whole big rigmarole, and Catwoman, I wasn't buying and picking up Batman. It's part of that thing that I had my little rant on the Slack about. The new writer, or the writer of this issue of Batman, does nothing to catch you up with what's going on in the main story. Even in the story, they don't tell you. So they're just assuming you're reading the whole thing, and I didn't, so I'm clueless. I'm like, okay, I don't know what's happening. All right.
Yeah, I'm thinking accessibility in comics is just not given the time and effort it needs.
Yeah, we do have questions later on, and spoiler, we are going to talk about that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm already starting my rant early.
Well, shall we dive into DC?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about our 14 comics.
I'm not going to talk about all of them, but we'll talk about a few of them.
No, just a few. Did you want me to pick first, or did you want to pick first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, one of the ones that I'll pick, and I know this is one that you did not get, is Peacemaker Tries Hard number 5 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this Peacemaker book, I didn't know it was a Black Label going into it. And I never really read Peacemaker before. I didn't even watch that TV series they had on Max. Now that's called HBO Max and Max. But I read this, and it's a funny comic. It's enjoyable. It made me a Kyle Starks fan reading this. It's Black Label, so I was reading it this time just trying to see what makes this Black Label. And then I'm like, oh, they got to intertwine an F-bomb here or there.
Mm.
So that's literally, they could have not done that and not made it Black Label, because you could have made the story without those two F-bombs that I saw.
I certainly could have. I don't know if the writer could have.
Yeah. I mean, more realistic, whatever. But that's what it is. There's no nudity, no excessive violence. It's just, I was like, oh, okay, two F-bombs, that's what we're doing. But the story is a ton of fun, nonsensical at times. I find myself smiling when I read it, when I'm done reading it. And like, to give you an idea of what's happening, you know, you got Peacemaker and Red Bee making a raid on this character, the Brains, his hideout. And at one point, and going into this Brains hideout, just to tell you how insane it gets, they get attacked by a nursery full of baby death strokes. That kind of stuff happens in this comic, which you hear that and you're like, that's stupid, but it's stupid, but it's funny at the same time, the way it plays out.
I'll take your word for that.
I did not sell you on this comic.
No. I've never been a huge Peacemaker fan, but it's also a character that really the majority of the body of work for it is like back in, I think, the 60s or something.
Yeah.
The character has not shown up all that much, really, since DC took it over. It's shown up here and there. Law, Lethal Assault Weapons was a miniseries they did. It's been a few other things in like a group setting or whatever, but really it's based on the Suicide Squad movie and the TV show that they're kind of making a push with the character. And that's fine.
Okay.
If it's working, it's working, but it's not something that I've got any particular affinity for.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I have no affinity for this. This is my first run-in other than him popping up at the back of some comics. And I had fun with it, just maybe because I'm a blank slate going into it. I thought it was enjoyable. Like I said, it made me a Kyle Starks the writer fan. I'm not saying I'm going to buy everything he writes, but if his name's on there, I'll be like, he left a good impression to where I'll just sample the book, probably.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's a good thing that coming out of this book.
Yeah. If you find a writer you like, that's worth a lot.
Yeah, and to give you an idea, it's not A-plus material. It's more like B+, but it's that funny B+.
Cool.
Yeah. So what's your book?
Batman Superman World's Finest number 18.
Yeah. I did enjoy that.
It was a lot of fun. It's another first meeting of Batman and Superman. And you go back through the decades, this has happened a number of times.
Okay, yeah.
But this was fun. What surprised me the most is there's a criminal leaving clues and stuff as they're wont to do in Gotham. And this time it's being done in Kryptonese.
Yes.
And this is the Kryptonese from like the Silver Bronze Age, like pre-John Byrne and stuff. So like 50s to the 1985 type stuff. And it's like, I haven't seen this Kryptonese literally in decades. And there were one or two times, like there was something scrawled on the Gotham Mall memorial wall or something like that. And it's like, I can't read it, so I can tell there's something there, but all in all, it was a fun issue. Some interesting twists on, you know, how Batman and Superman supposedly first met.
Yeah.
And again, it's got that mix of kind of a modern version of like a Silver Age style story that Mark Waid has just been nailing in this series. So it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun. And although I know they've met multiple times, their first meeting, this is my first meeting of them, my first time seeing their first meeting. So I like that. And I like how they kind of detective each other, you know, to figure out who they are, you know, looking for the clues with each other. That made it really fun. I liked it a lot. I thought it was written really well.
Well, and I liked this version of that aspect of, you know, how do they figure out who each other is and stuff better than, say, the John Byrne version in the 80s. Versus, again, we'd had some over, you know, way back when in the Real World's Finest series originally or some other places. So every 10-ish years or whenever they feel people have forgotten the last time, they'll trot out a here's how they first met. And there's usually some good similarities. The who they go fight or whatever is always a little different. But it really comes down to the subtleties, and it establishes kind of the relationship they've got. And I thought this was a good tone to set.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And like I said, I liked it a lot, too.
Yeah, so, ton of fun.
Well, for my next pick in DC, it's going to be surprising seeing as people who don't go on the Slack channel don't know, I kind of complained about the book a little bit, but it was on one aspect of it. Shazam number 3. And my only complaint was the book came out, the last issue, I think, was in June. And so here it was at the tail end of August. It's been roughly about 3 months since the last issue.
Yeah. Well, they did the 2 months of Night Terrors. Yeah.
Exactly. So that 3 month pause really hurt the momentum of the book, because literally I went and I had to dig up my old issue. Okay, what's going on? And I flipped to it. I'm like, he's literally just picking up off what happened before. And God bless Mark Waid and his memory, but my memory is not that. So I'm like, what is going on? I couldn't pick it up because he just kind of went with the story. So, I mean, the story is good. Shazam, Billy, you know, he's not using his powers. You know, we basically see him getting bullied in school and things like that.
Well, when we left off, when he was in the Shazam form, he was acting a bit of a bully and very not heroic.
Exactly. Yes.
And he was aware of that. So that's why he wasn't doing it. So, I mean, I had remembered that much about where it had left off in the first two issues, but not, again, exactly where.
Exactly. I had kind of forgotten that until I went and picked up the other issue. So I was like, huh? Why is he not using his powers? And then I picked up, I was like, oh yeah, now I remember. Which, that was my point. I'm like, why is he not using his powers? But Dan Mora, for me, is the hero of this book just because of the art.
Yeah.
And here, he's doing an amazing job. It's just wonderful. They're a great tag team to be together. And I think the book itself is written really well. It's just one of those things, because of the event that Mark Waid was told, or I don't think he chose to, he's told, you're going to write Night Terror Shazam. And it's basically, I looked at that just to check it out. It's Mary Marvel, you know, and it's not even Shazam.
Well, I would imagine he was told there was going to be a Night Terrors Shazam and maybe given the option of writing it. And I don't know if he was forced to do it or whatever, but I would imagine he would have gone ahead and done that regardless, you know, kind of a thing of, well, I'd rather not have somebody else Shanghai my characters for 2 months.
Yeah, I literally went on the DC app to go look and see. I'm like, is stuff coming out of there into this? And it wasn't. It's just a two-issue story. Has nothing to do with the main Shazam book.
That's what I was banking on, because I would have been upset if this had been essentially kind of the fifth part of the opening arc and I missed the middle two because of it was in Night Terrors.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a no-win situation to a degree.
Exactly. No-win situation. And like I said, we'll talk about that more in the questions, but overall, I thought this was a good issue. I probably would have rated it a half a grade higher if I had read it 1 month after the last issue versus 3 months.
I would agree with that. I thought it was an okay issue. It could have done better getting me back into the story, just in general, but certainly after the Night Terrors gap. And even if I'd read it a month after, while I think I would have liked it better, I still think it had, again, that status quo change of Billy not wanting to be Shazam at this point, kind of happening between issues.
Yeah, I agree.
So I love what Mark Waid and Dan Mora are doing. I think they're a great team. Dan Mora is doing great art here. He did the stuff on Shattered Grid brilliantly over on the Power Ranger stuff. I would love for them to do, just as a single issue kind of a deal, a Power Rangers riff with Shazam.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because, I mean, you've essentially got them all in the same costumes with different colors, effectively.
Yep.
You know, and if they were to try to hide their Shazamness or something, you know, full face masks, all that kind of a thing. You could do a hilarious, I think, Power Rangers riff on it.
Yeah.
So it'd be fun.
It definitely could be cool. So what is your next pick? Your number two from DC.
Justice Society of America number 6.
I thought that was really good too.
It won me over with the cover even, because that's basically an homage to All-Star Squadron number 1.
Yeah.
Where they've got, you know, who's going to be on the team kind of a deal here. They're using sketch pages, which is a great use of the sketch pages, of all the lost children, not all of them, many of them. And the whole thing was just kind of reintroducing a lot of these kids and where they fit in, what's the status quo, how are they going to interact with the Justice Society. So it was good. It was a little slow of an issue,
yes.
A little bit of a repositioning.
Yes.
But it also covered a number of characters. And I loved when Dr. Fate was meeting the protege of the original Dr. Fate. And she's like, oh, you got the helmet. So did you just inherit it from him? Or is that how it worked? And he's like, well, it went through this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, this person. And then eventually I got it kind of a deal.
Yeah, that was funny.
Kind of. It's not in a straight line.
Exactly.
So they're having some fun with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think with this book, like you said, the repositioning, because it left me hungry for the JSA because I felt like it became more of the kids' book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the sidekicks coming back into the world and Stargirl, you know, there and everything like that. And so they're basically, it's almost like rehoming the kids. Where are we going to put these kids?
Yeah.
Do they have a long distant relative here, or do we have to, you know, stick them in like almost like a foster family type thing? So that's the part where I'm like, what are they going to do with it? I don't know. Are we going to focus on the kids or are we going to focus on the JSA? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if one or two of these kids get homed with the grandkids of like one of their siblings or something kind of a deal.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Finding a long lost sibling and yeah, something
well,
like
but
that.
The sibling would be, you know, 80 years old or some such, because again, they were out of time.
Exactly. This old man. Yeah, you're going to live with him, kid. Be quiet.
Yeah, your niece is going to act almost as your grandmother at this point and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff they could do. They're going in different directions. They've got enough of these kids. They can do different status quos. I love the Earth 2 characters. I think they're doing right by them in this series. I mean, Geoff Johns is a great writer. Michael Janin, terrific artist. I just wish this was coming out on a little more timely basis.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the only other one that I could dare to talk about, because I didn't put a lot of notes on these, because some of them I didn't like all the Night Terror stuff, I didn't put any notes. I don't really want to talk about it. I really don't. Batman, I got by accident. Because I didn't know about the part two of the Gotham War that I'm not reading. So I will mention the last issue of Dark Knights of Steel, number 12, came out. And I will say that if you are a single issue reader of this and you read current with your comics, DC should apologize to all of us because it was so late. I mean, it was just really hard to follow what was happening. But I do want to say, even though I was lost, the story was written well, the art was terrific. And it ended where it was an open-ended ending where I feel like we're going to have more stories in this world and almost a Justice League type thing happening here. And I think that could be a lot of fun if they got enough material and it's collected one day. This could be a top-selling property just because it's written well. It's just the single issues. It's been atrocious with the shipping.
Yeah, I think the scheduling was the Achilles heel of the series. I thought it was a decent end of the story. And I say decent because, again, it killed the momentum leading into this. I mean, the previous one was a couple of months ago. The one before that was a couple of months earlier. And it felt like Tom Taylor has plans for a sequel, whether that's been approved, will get approved, who knows. And fortunately, there seemed to be enough survivors for a sequel because I was not so sure of that at the beginning.
Yes.
And if a sequel does eventually come out, it might be worth doing a couple of back issue spotlights, you know, two or three, depending how we want to slice it up, on this volume and just kind of reading it in rapid succession.
Yeah.
Because, again, the delays on this killed the story momentum.
Yeah, there are so many comics like this. It's kind of unfortunate where they are just gems and treasures. This is, you can tell this is a treasure to be read together. And so that's why I'm completely open to doing a back issue spotlight. But when you read it monthly because of shipping delays, whether it's the writer or the artist, I think it was the writer, but we'll never know. It's just, it killed the property and it killed the momentum. And so, you know, thankfully we have trades today. That's all I can say about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we'll have to think about if this sequel comes out, you know, how we want to do this as a back issue spotlight.
Yeah.
Because we could either do it in, you know, two or three episodes or just do it in one, go for the start it, finish it in a sitting and talk about it. Does it work better in the single sitting? That kind of discussion. And I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that could be fun. Or we could create complete and utter annoyance for the listeners by recording one episode 3 months and then wait until halfway through the year, record another one, and then wait like, you know, 5 or 6 months to record the next one. They'll be like, what's going on?
Well, what we'll do is we'll do one episode, but we'll have a 3-hour pause after about issue 7 or something, you know?
Yeah. Suffer with us.
Why is this episode 20 hours?
Yeah, that's the real experience. Yeah.
Just play the Jeopardy theme for a couple hours when the, you know, between the gaps.
Exactly.
Funny. Again, I liked it. I don't know why a company as big as DC couldn't have gotten their ducks in a row to get it out on time.
Yeah. The most frustrating thing, and this was something Brawlinator posted on the Slack channel today.
Yeah, I know where you're going on this, and I saw it. Yeah, it's worth talking about.
Yeah. Okay, so Bill Willingham, Fables, he basically said, he's quit DC.
Well, the question is, why is Fables late?
Yeah, why is Fables late? And he's like, in answer to the far too many requests, he's like, basically, I turned in my script 2 years ago, and it's been done. And he's like, for multiple reasons, that hasn't worked. You know, they haven't released it. And he's like, I haven't worked with DC since then. I fired them. Because I don't know how they have the story in hand for 2 years, and then there's delays in publishing said story.
Well, they had the scripts. He had written all 12 scripts, and they had that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They've still got to get the art. The art's not only got to get drawn, it's got to get inked, it's got to get colored, it's got to get lettered, and you know these letters, gosh. If they can't turn it over in, you know, 2 or 3 nights, what, you know, I mean, seriously, a lot of them get stuck doing that because the rest of the chain's so damn slow. It also could have been sitting around lost in DC somehow. I don't know. All we know is that Willingham is saying it wasn't his fault, and I see no reason not to believe him on that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they tried to get everything, at least on the writing side, in-house and stuff, which makes sense because he has had some issues over time.
Yeah.
They just didn't do that on the art side. It would be interesting if Buckingham were to speak up and say, well, I had the art done at this point.
And if
or not, because maybe he had problems. I don't know. But either way, it definitely sounds like the odds of more Fables after this is like zero based on Willingham saying he's fired DC and isn't going to work with them again.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, whoa, that's rough.
Not the first big name creator I've seen had that attitude with DC.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate because I feel like we're at a point where the big two need those star names. Like, you know, like Mark Millar said, the industry's kind of in flux and things are happening, and it'd be great to see well-known names and talents in the big two. And I know people say, well, indie stuff does not keep most comic shops open. Just unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Well, and the funny thing is the kind of indie stuff that does is something like Fables.
Yeah, that's true.
Because while it's DC, it's kind of indie in nature.
Yeah, exactly. It's that's very true. Yeah.
But if you can essentially chase off somebody who wrote 150 issue run that was very well regarded and stuff, or you can chase off a legendary artistic talent like George Perez and stuff, as they kind of did back around the time of the New 52 and stuff, what level of dysfunction has been going on at DC for how long that happens?
Yeah. Inquiring minds want to know. I'm one of them.
I just don't get it.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, so you've covered your three.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right.
I tracked it too.
My third is Batman Scooby-Doo Mysteries number 11.
Oh yeah, you always loved that book.
I did, but I spent a little more time looking at the art this time because it was a good solid story. Art was solid, but they had part of it where it's set in a virtual reality kind of thing.
Okay.
And it starts with Bruce Wayne in a theater kind of, oh, we've got this new 3D virtual reality gadget and stuff. But, you know, crime strikes, story gets derailed from there. But I noticed as I was looking at the Scooby Gang sitting in the theater, the chairs seemed like they were 3D props for reference and stuff like that, which makes perfect sense and stuff. The characters were clearly hand-drawn. And again, this is not the first time, but Eric Owen seems to be the artist here, who has a knack for not only getting these characters pretty much perfectly on model, I say pretty much because he's doing it in some poses that we just don't ever see these characters in.
Okay.
You know, and issue or two before, sometimes with the camera angle here, you've got Daphne in like theater seating, kind of leaning over the chair, looking back and talking to, I guess, Shaggy and Scooby or something like that. And again, that's not the kind of stuff we normally see, but it nails that Saturday morning look of the Scooby Gang.
Nice.
And it's got, again, the 3D reference for the architecture at least gives that a certain solidity and stuff. It still looks kind of cartoony, comic booky, however you want to phrase that. And we're getting down to where we only have one more issue after this. And I really hope they do not only more Scooby Batman type stuff, but I hope they have this artist on it. And I'd really love for them to turn it into almost like a Brave and the Bold sort of team-up series with Batman, the Scooby Gang, and other DC characters.
That would actually be fun. And you want to know what? I've never given the title a try, even though you've enjoyed it. And that's not because I don't trust you or don't like you.
I think that's a lot of it. No, I'm kidding.
No. But if they come back with another one, I'll probably sample it. I gotta try it out and just see why you've liked it so much. And just see. I did watch Scooby when I was a kid. You know, I watched the cartoons, but I haven't watched it since I don't know how old I was when I quit watching them.
I'm not going to say I'm a hardcore Scooby fan.
But it works.
I like the Saturday morning feel to it. It's simpler. Not simpler. It's a more innocent narrative world. In other words, you don't have to worry about a Batman villain, you know, eviscerating people or deforming them, you know, mutilating them or anything of the sort. It's going to be a little less gruesome of crime and stuff. It's more, again, the who's going to rob the bank, who's going to, you know, steal the art or something like that kind of a deal.
Yeah. Actually, with you saying that, it almost, I know this is not a direct comparison or in any way, but I remember Mark Waid when he had a run of Daredevil after it had gone really dark. His was very light and free-flowing, mm-hmm. and there's something to that. It's like a palate cleanser when you get really dark and gritty comics a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's something where, again, it's accessible to all ages, and I loved it with the Scooby-Doo team-up series they did, where you'd get like the Justice Society or the Challengers of the Unknown or some other stuff. And it's kind of like how we're seeing in Batman Superman World's Finest, some of those more Silver Age characters when they were in the spotlight then, like Metamorpho and Plastic Man and the Metal Men and stuff like that, that we just don't see as much today, you know, doing that with a Saturday morning vibe to it can really work.
Yeah, no, so, I'm kind of excited to maybe check it out.
Yeah, I may look through the DC app has the Scooby-Doo team-up stuff, because there were a couple of those issues that I thought were a lot of fun. You've got the app?
Yeah, so I could check it out.
Yeah, check it out and just see if there's some guest stars that look interesting or something like that, because with that title, the Scooby team-up, it varied between here's other cartoon characters from Saturday morning versus, okay, let's pull in the JSA or some other DC Comics characters.
Yeah, with the app, it's just the question, can I find it?
There is that. There is that.
That search is definitely not good.
So, with this winding down, I'm expecting them to do something with Scooby and stuff, because this is the second Batman Scooby-Doo mystery series they did. Prior to that, it was, I think, the team-up series and some other stuff. So, I'm looking forward to where they may go with this next.
Very cool. So, over to Marvel, then?
Sounds good.
All right. On Marvel, I received 25 comics, just so you know.
I got 22.
Ah, we're very close. All right. Since I went first, well, do you want me to go first again?
I'm fine going first. I don't mind. Do you want to go first?
You go first.
All right. I am going to pick a mutant title.
Ah, I like some of those. So which one?
Alpha Flight number 1.
All right. Cool, cool. I did like that one.
I am a longtime Alpha Flight fan. This had a nice kind of classic Alpha Flight feel to it, which was working for me.
Yes.
It was really interesting to see Roger Boggs Jr., the son of the original Roger Boggs, who was Boggs in the original Alpha Flight series. But what I really enjoyed with this, and I was starting to get the feeling, and they landed it at the end, this is a modern riff of a classic X title from years past.
Yeah.
Where they're taking the same premise, the same kind of twists and stuff, and it's like, this is the right time to do it. Let's do it with the Canadian team. And they've kind of had to split the team into two parts so they can play both sides. And it's like, when I realized what they were doing, it's like, okay, this is just a ton of fun.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. When the twist happened in there, I was just like, it almost got you hooked at that point. You're like, all right, this is cool. I love it. And it's only a 5-issue miniseries, but
yeah,
at the beginning, you're a little bit off kilter because you're like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Why do we only have 4 Alpha Flight members? What about the rest?
Yeah, where are they? What's going on? I still can't remember. What happened to Sasquatch?
I don't remember, but I was not getting all the Hulk stuff, and he was showing up over there.
Yeah, something might have happened in the Hulk. My memory's horrible, but all right, we'll leave that.
The last time I'd seen him was that Gamma Flight.
Yeah, he probably got killed over there or something.
He'll get better.
Yeah, hey, they should resurrect him. He's a mutant.
I was going to say, it's not like the first time he died. And actually, I don't think he's a mutant.
Oh, that's true. That's true. He's a Wendigo. Or no.
No,
Gamma character. Gamma.
I was going to say, originally his origin was gamma radiation into a Sasquatch kind of a creature and such.
That's right.
But then they switched the body he was in to be what had been Snowbird's. So it was now a godlike body. And then they The body swapping involved with him, Snowbird, and Hulk over the run of the M-Box was kind of tied into that, to agree. In the original Alpha Flight run, gets a little confusing.
That's true.
But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, I really like him, too.
I liked how they acknowledged the Alpha Flight space stations, but now they're getting a little more down to Earth and back to their roots and stuff. So
I agree, because I did like that space series they had, but yeah, I'm happy we're getting back to Earth, because there's only so much you can do out there.
It made no sense for Puck and some of the others to be sitting there in little, you know, Vipers or whatever, flying around shooting at things in space.
Yeah. Well, since you went mutant, I was going to call out something else, but I think I'm going to go mutant as well. I'm going to go with X-Men 25.
Kind of figured you would, yeah.
Yeah, Jerry Duggan has been killing it on the X-Men book, I feel like. We get a ton on Kitty Pryde, Kate, which they're calling her Kate. They're trying to age her up, which is kind of cool.
I don't think it's so much aging her up as treating her more seriously. It's a darker turn for Kitty.
Correct. And what I mean by aging her up is I really liked what you were talking about. If they go to a school, her being the headmaster,
mm-hmm.
and you can't be calling her Kitty, Kate would work. And so I'm just thinking of that. That's stuck in my mind. I'm like, I like this. And I love that they matured her and the only mutant that can't go to Krakoa and use the gates. I love that whole aspect and why and all that. But I like it, just what they focused on her.
Yeah.
And Shadowcat with her and the swords and everything. But I can't really spoil it because a lot goes into the Hellfire Gala and what's happened in that book, because this was a Fall of X title. And the status of so many of the mutants, like Scott Summers and what's happening, Orcus and Mars, what's happening. There's only so much you can talk about here, and I don't know how to talk about it in the right way.
Well, they shook up the table pretty seriously with the Hellfire Gala.
Yes, tremendously.
And this is them kind of setting the pieces back on the table in the new status quo. I mean, a ton happened in this issue.
So much. It was ridiculous.
They did a bit of a dark turn for Kitty, which I didn't love it, but it made sense. And there were some things that, you know, her status quo is different now than it was before the Hellfire Gala and stuff, as is the case for so many mutants. And I expect she's going to be kind of the lead character potentially for the X-Men title for a little bit, maybe. Or maybe they're going to bounce between characters and it's like, okay, what's going on with this one or that one? Because there's so many characters to kind of not only reset the scene, but we've got to see the fallout of what happened.
I agree. I feel like she's becoming a focal point, because the whole thing with the Hellfire Gala, you know, the last couple times they had it was you get the new X-Men team. But with what happened there, what's going to happen with this book? And that's where I'm really curious where we're going.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a ton of fun.
It was fantastic. And it was a huge book. So there's so much. But you and I speak veiled about it because you can't really say too much because it's going to kill it for people who get those monthly shipments late and will get spoiled on everything that's going on.
Well, and I want to entice people to read it. I don't want to give them a reason not to read it of, oh, here's what it is. I don't want to steal the book's thunder.
Yeah, I would say several of the X books, not all of them, but several of them are just killing it right now. Just awesome stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Again, because of the Hellfire Gala, because they made some serious changes at that point, everything right now is in kind of that opening chapter of the next arc.
Yes.
And that's a pro and a con, because a lot of it, it's like, well, I'm not sure exactly where they're going. They're just starting to point in a direction now. But it gives them a bit of freedom as to where they're going and why. That's cool.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is a fantastic title, I think. If you haven't checked out the X-Books, you're missing out, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and my next pick is another X-Book.
Yeah, which one? I think I know.
Astonishing Iceman.
Oh, that's one I didn't get, so I don't know. How was it?
They are treating him like the powerhouse they've often alluded to him being, because he is an Omega-level mutant.
Oh, is it good?
They dealt with how he can even have a title after the Hellfire Gala.
Yes, that, I was curious about that.
There was one character there that I didn't really recognize, but yeah, we've probably seen him before, and I just don't keep track of all the characters orbiting the mutants and stuff, because there's so many. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. It is Steve Orlando, so it may or may not work for you, James.
I think that's why I didn't pick it up. Yep.
Could be. But I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed his past miniseries he's had them, and I'm not sure. I assume it's a miniseries because everything is these days.
Yeah.
But it definitely is setting him up as a thorn in people's side that need that thorn in their side, if you know what I mean. So again, I thought it was a ton of fun.
Well, I'm intrigued enough to where I almost want to send off a message to Eric. Can you add these into my next box? because I've been enjoying so many of the X books. They've been fantastic. So
they're definitely setting him up as somebody who's part of the bigger arc, but also a little aside from that arc, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so I know exactly what you mean.
In other words, I don't know that he's going to be, you know, in any of the scenes that Kitty's in over in X-Men and stuff like that. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, but it's at least, again, part of that bigger storyline they're telling.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad that's working for you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, okay, man, I'm kind of torn because there were quite a few good ones. I am going to go with another mutant book because you did. I actually really liked X-Men Red number 14. Did you read that one?
I did read that.
Okay. It started off not very good for me at the beginning.
With all those captions and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Because that really won me over in a very sarcastic way.
Yeah.
It did not.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, this is rough. And then you get all those Iraqi characters that you don't really know and care about in the back of the book. I'm like, oh God, this is not good. Okay. Then you learn about the unrest in the leadership on Arrakis and Mars and how, you know, we saw what happened with Magneto. We see the one girl who's not getting along with Storm. I can't remember her name for the life of me right now. But you realize that Orcus may have had a hand in some of this.
Yeah.
And so that's where it starts amping up. And I'm like, whoa.
Well, they also bring in two other characters. We get Nova and we get Sunspot.
Yeah, Nova and Sunspot, which was very cool. And then I would say if you like a little bit of time jumping and a war, I'll just leave it at that. This book is so cool. And it felt like, man, what is going to happen here? Are we leading up to Apocalypse returning? I don't know what's going on, but this is just awesome. I was just, did you like the time jump and how they're showing what was happening?
The opening with all those captions and stuff kind of bored me to a bit. It was more Mars mutant drama filled with characters I don't really care for. I mean, they're not bad characters. I just am not attached to them.
Yeah, I don't know who they are.
And it's kind of this title is starting to lose me. I mean, it's clear they're building up to something.
Yes.
And it could be a very cool something, but it's also not something where I'm thinking, oh, wow, I've got to stay with it. If I had to drop a book, this would be on that potential list.
You know what? What's weird is I can see that because I feel like those Iraqi characters, what you're feeling, and I kind of feel that too. It's kind of like how I felt with the Legion because I don't know them and there's so many. And you're just like, it's overwhelming. And it is with these characters for me too. It was only these political intrigues and me feeling like it's building up to this. And I can't say this is going to happen, but like an apocalypse event. I feel like an apocalypse event will be coming forth from this book, but I can't even say that.
When you say that, do you mean an event with the character Apocalypse or do you mean an apocalyptic event?
Well, both. No, but with the character Apocalypse.
The two tend to coincide. That's fair.
Yeah, I think Apocalypse, the character, comes into this.
Yeah, I think so.
And we get a huge event coming out of this. Almost like a Mars versus Earth type thing happening, possibly. And so I'm on board for that, if that's where they're going. And it, like I said, like you've said, it's a cast of characters we don't know. So if they make that the focus and it doesn't become this big, intriguing battle for the future, I could see myself kind of falling away from it. So that's where it's like more of like a hope, and it kind of hooked me and got me excited based on where I think it's going.
Yeah, no, and I can totally understand that. I guess for me, it had the same problem that the Wonder Woman title had at one point when they started featuring a lot of the gods a lot more.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's like, I'm here for Wonder Woman, not the gods. With X-Men Red, I'm here for the mutants, not the Iraqi characters.
Yeah, no, I understand where you're going. I understand completely.
So, again, not bad, just not clicking with me.
And I completely understand your viewpoint on that. That makes sense.
All right, for my last pick.
The last one.
I'm going to go with another X-Men related title, and I bet you can't guess which one.
Let's see. It's not Children of the Vault, because you're probably not getting that. Immortal X-Men?
Nope.
All right, what is... Oh, Invincible Iron Man!
You got it!
Yes! Yes! I was like, wait a minute, if I didn't guess it, that's become a mutant book. Isn't that awesome?
They're continuing to pull Iron Man into that X-Men circle. It's making sense. It's also casting an interesting light on what may be happening in the next few issues of a couple of titles. We've got another character that's teased there at the end getting involved, and it's like, okay, didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I should have, because, again, certain circles, that kind of a deal. But it's definitely a very different direction for Iron Man, and it could be a lot of fun, and I'm curious what the end game of all this would eventually be.
Yeah, I am completely on board with you here, because when they started off with issue number one, And Tony kind of lost control of his company. And I'm like, okay, we're going down the he's going to be broke path, just like they did with Batman. Oh, God, here we are. And I got really jaded over the title. I'm like, where are we going? Now they have reinvigorated. I think it's Jerry Dugan on this one as well.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, he's doing the main X-Men book. And he has reinvigorated the character by tying in what's going on with Stark Industries and the character with what's happening over in Krakoa and the mutants. And it is fantastic. We're even seeing, I can't think of her name, the lady who has the big sword. And anyways, there's a mutant in the book who was in the Iron Man armor for a little while, which was awesome.
Oh, the one who was in the Iron Man armor was Emma.
Emma. Yeah, Emma Frost. I was like, why am I drawing a blank?
She doesn't have a sword. That would have been magic.
I think I'm magic and though is Emma Frost. My bad.
It was Emma. Yeah, yeah. This is why I get confused.
Yes, but yeah, that's me. My brain and how do I put it all together? I don't. But Emma Frost in there was awesome. I'm just digging this book. I think it is so much fun right now.
One of the things I want to see before this whole Iron Man and the X-Men thing kind of diverges again, I want to see him in a new suit of armor.
Yes.
In the classic X-Men blue and gold color scheme.
Yeah.
It's basically an armored X-Men kind of a deal.
That'd be awesome.
And maybe float the rumor that maybe he's a genius because he's a mutant.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
But just float that as an idea. Don't necessarily make it true or false.
His mutant power may be that he's a genius. Wow.
Ton of stuff they could do. It's fun. It's a definitely different direction than anything I've read for Iron Man. And I've been reading that for hundreds and hundreds of issues.
Yeah, it's a fun book. I'm enjoying it. I feel like the X stuff that they put in Iron Man has reinvigorated the title.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like it was kind of wallowing before then. A little bit.
A little.
Yeah. Well, okay. My last pick, I was debating between two because I really liked Avengers number 4. I think it's fantastic. But I decided I want to call out a new book. It's a new number 1. And it's Immortal Thor number 1. I actually think I liked Avengers a little bit more. But since I haven't ever talked about Immortal Thor, I'll talk about it. Al Ewing takes over the reins. You know, he's basically writing Thor. And the story at the beginning, the thing that made it not as good as Avengers for me, it was a little bit by the numbers, and I felt like there was no passion there. I'm like, I was a little bit bored, like, honestly, through, like, the first half of the book. But then we get Thor getting into a fight with some frost giants. It gets a little bit more interesting because he's using strategy, and there's some comedy that's in there, and not comedy like yuck yucks, but how it kind of plays out. But then you get introduced to some new characters and new bad characters, I will say. You get to see Loki and some stuff that happens with the Bifrost. I won't go into too much detail, but there was a damage to the Bifrost in a past title. And you get this new bad person called Tyrannus the Utgard. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Apparently the Utgard are a real thing from Norse mythology. I had to look it up online because I'm like, Where is this coming from? And it's this huge character, and the gods are almost like mortals to him because they're so powerful, which is insane. You know, you're thinking about a god, an ever-living god, and the only thing that's giving Thor even a chance against him is Thor has become the All-Father. And that's, you know, I've talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
Run of Thor, how the father's kind of in the hammer now, the essence of Odin, and he's the All-Father. And what's going to happen with this? You know, you got elder gods locked away like Freya. You have Thor who can kind of stand up. The rest of the gods can't really stand up these people, and they're running amok on Earth. So that's what's going on. It ended really, really cool. Will he stick the landing? I don't know, but the first half of the book, honestly, I found a little bit boring until like the second half. Then it got pretty good.
Interesting.
So it wasn't great, but it was good. Really good.
Now, if I were to take over the Thor title, and we know there's zero risk of this, but if I were, based on what you were just saying, I would be tempted to eventually bring Odin back because he's a good character.
You would think so.
He can go back to being the All-Father. You can do the stuff with the wife, and maybe there's the marital drama at the god level. That could be fun for a subplot or two. But then bring Thor back, but have him be the All-Son.
The All-Son. Oh my God, that'd be hilarious.
Don't know exactly what that would mean, but, you know, amp his power-ups a little bit. I don't know. It could be fun.
Hey, by the way, just a one-off, I'm not going to really talk about the title that much, but remember that redacted book or secret book that came out?
Yes, I would have ordered it if I'd known what it was when it was solicited.
Yeah.
And I'm still seeing if I can get it because I am curious about it. It's another mutant book.
Yeah, I did pick it up. I picked it up on the redacted title or whatever it was called.
Classified.
Yeah, Classified. That's what it was. Ms. Marvel, the New Mutant number one is what I picked up. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was good. It was a solid read for the first issue. So I enjoyed it. It was a new writer who I'd never heard of, but I felt like they did a good job. And it's only, I think, a 4 or 5 issue miniseries. So
4 or 5. I think I've ordered the third and asked Eric to get the first two, but we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully he gets it for you. I will say I'm on it. I pre-ordered all 4 of them, and it was good just because I knew you were thinking about it. So I tell you, yeah, I liked it.
No, I appreciate that, because if you told me, hey, it stinks, I'd tell Eric, no, I don't want that.
Yeah, they added a few F-bombs. They went Black Label on it. No, I'm just kidding. They didn't do that.
I am well past the days of a Classified title, a trust us, it'll be great solicitation, no cover art, and I'm not biting on that.
Yeah, it's kind of, it gets frustrating.
And there was a point I would have.
It's like, just tell us what it is, and it's like, and then I understand why they didn't, but then it got spoiled anyway, so it's like, oh, all right, whatever.
They could have just done it as the title is The New Mutant, and a character is discovered to be a mutant or something like that. Plant the seed, maybe it's Miles Morales, maybe it's a Nova, maybe it's some other champion, or something like that.
Yeah, somebody who's a new, and who is it?
And then when it comes out, it's still got the New Mutant title, but, put Ms. Marvel on it if you want,
Exactly.
So there's ways they could have put it out there as, okay, this looks interesting, without, not telling us anything, and therefore a lot of people not getting it.
Yeah, and that's what it was, Classified. I've seen Redacted before in solicits, so that's why I went with that.
We've seen both before.
Exactly.
It would be fun to go back through past solicits of all the times they have done the, we're not going to tell you what the title is, but we want you to buy it anyways. And just how did those pan out? What were they? Were they good stories? Did they sell decently? But somebody would have to do the research on that, and I'm way too lazy.
I'm right there with you. I'm too lazy to do it.
Yeah, I just don't have the interest enough to do it for that these days.
Yeah. But overall, I felt like it was a decent month for Marvel.
I would say it was, from what I've read so far, a decent month. I think the X-Men stuff is shaking stuff up pretty seriously, and that gives them a little edge.
Yeah, that's what I would agree. I'm still excited about the X-Books, and this is years after Hox Pox, and so I feel like they nailed it as far as I went. I mean, there's been some ebbs and flows, but overall it's been solid. It's kept me engaged.
I think the real question at this point is, how long is this Fall of X going to go? And do we come out with a new status quo, or is there another pivot point or two? Kind of what's the big picture looking like?
I may have an answer for you on that.
Oh.
Well, on how far us go, because I have the Fall of X checklist right now.
Well, we've got the checklist. But yeah, is that serving as kind of the prelude of stuff, or is that the totality of the Fall of X?
Exactly. I think something big has to come after this, because I think this is setting up the new status quo that's coming forth.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, just my gut's telling me that.
Well, I know they've got a few things in the works that are going to play out over a little bit of time, and then I think Tom Brevoort takes over editing the X titles.
Exactly.
So I'm expecting that's going to time with, and here's the bold new direction.
Yeah, here's Brevoort with his bold new direction. And do we know who's taken over the other books, what Brevoort used to do, the Avengers and everything, the heroes?
I have not paid enough attention, so I don't know.
Me neither. No clue. Hopefully someone good.
Yes. Hopefully somebody who wouldn't get Jason Aaron on the Avengers for 5 years.
Yes, please.
Just didn't work for me. That's all I'm saying. Not a bad writer. Just didn't like him on that book.
Exactly. When he's on the right book, he's awesome. But that was not it.
And that's so true of so many writers. We've seen some great ones over, particularly at Marvel, where it's like, man, they did a terrific job on this one title. They put him on something else. And it's like, ooh, yeah, not working.
Yeah. Dan Slott, Spider-Man. Dan Slott Fantastic Four. That's awesome.
Well, the original Dan Slott Spider-Man was good.
The Amazing Spider-Man was good.
The Amazing Spider-Man. The current Spider-Man, not so much.
Yes, new Spider-Man.
Didn't he do an Iron Man run?
His Iron Man run was not good.
Yeah, yeah.
But his Fantastic Four was excellent.
Yep.
Just excellent.
Yep.
So, same writer, different titles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, on to the indies?
Works for me.
All right. I go first this time?
Sure.
All right, I'm going to start. I'm just going to go alphabetical because I'm debating. Okay.
You want to go first and you're not sure where to go. Jeez. No,
I know. What's that son of a gun? Okay, I'm going to go with Fire and Ice, number one. This is a brand new series. And apparently there was like a TV series, and I think you can watch it on Netflix, called Fire and Ice. And it was Frank Frazetta and some other creators who did that. It was like an animated movie. But I never watched the movie, even though people sent me the link to it. I just didn't have time. But we get Leonardo Manco is the artist in this. And I thought he killed the art in this book. Every page is beautiful. And this is a Dynamite book, by the way. And Dynamite has been known to have not stellar interior art. And this was really good. Bill Willingham is the writer on this. So he fired DC. He's writing at Dynamite right now. And this is based off the TV show that I told you about, one of them being Frank Frazetta. And it's a story created in a world that's separated by two dominant empires. So one's in the north, one's in the south, almost like a Game of Thrones type setting or whatever have you, you know, north and south. And we get a story of the empire, but those that are crushed in the lands between. There's people that live in between these two vast empires that are kind of victims and subject to the whims of these two things. And so you're seeing it from their viewpoint, you know, like Dynamite's been known to strip mine properties. I hope yes. They don't do that with this. And the story's good. It's getting fleshed out right now. It's only the first issue. I'm hooked for now, but I'm worried because of the publisher. But like I said, if you want to see the viewpoint of people who are trapped between two dominant empires and how it's affecting their tribal life, you know, this is a sword and sandals type thing. This is a book you may want to check out.
Interesting.
Yeah, it worked for me.
I do find it funny that DC is doing a Fire and Ice Welcome to Smallville miniseries around this time. So every hilarious. Time I'm seeing Fire and Ice, I'm like, wait, which one? So, yeah.
Not the Smallville one.
Yeah. Let's see. First title I want to talk about is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 30th Anniversary Special.
30th Anniversary. Cool.
Boom's been doing this long enough that they did a 25th Anniversary Special.
Nice.
This was another where it's kind of an anthology. I think they had like six stories. One was focusing on Ernie, the original owner of the juice bar in Mighty Morphin. It's like, yeah, it's all right. We get a second story about Tommy Oliver, but it's really focused through the lens of the second Pink Ranger, who he winds up marrying and stuff. It was a surprisingly good story.
Nice.
Third one on Alpha, and we get the origin of both, I think, Alpha 5 and 6. And it really kind of, again, fit that character, gave some good backstory. That was a lot of fun.
Cool.
The fourth one was a Pink Ranger story written by Amy Jo Johnson, the original Pink Ranger. It was good, but it was a little confusing because I'm like, who is this Emma Phillips character? And that seems like really relevant to understand the story, and I don't know. But it looks like that'll be explained in a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers The Return. And cool. I don't know if that's a miniseries, if that's a one-shot, or what that is, or when that is. So curious about that. Got a little bit on the Ranger Academy with an established ranger kind of winding up being a mentor, kind of, sort of, and it was good, but a little odd. And then a bunch of splash pages where I think they just took all the pinup pages of the Power Rangers morphing out of the 100-and-some-odd issues they've done and stuff, and that was kind of cool. So overall, it was a good, fun read. I mean, it was $9.99, so a little expensive, but, you know, six stories, and most of them were fun material.
Very good. You've been enjoying Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You love the shows and the comics, so I'm glad you like the 30th anniversary.
And one of the things they had was kind of a reading order kind of a deal where it's just like, here's a map of the different arcs they've done over the, you know, 100-and-some-odd issues. And it is just so surprising to me that what I thought was one of their best, of Shattered Grid, that was back like the third or fourth arc. And they've done, you know, it was back around issue 25 or something, and they've done almost another 100 after that.
Very cool.
Boom has really kind of cracked the code on how to handle this property in comic format, and so many publishers took a stab at it before, and none of them got it even close to right.
They've been doing a good job. I mean, I think it was something Parrott was on the book.
Ryan Parrott. He was Parrott. One of the guys who wrote one of the stories here, yeah.
That's one of the issues I read with you when we were doing like that, and I remember it was decent. I just didn't know what the hell was going on because I don't know the Power Rangers, but it was cool. I thought it was fun to experience it.
Yeah, I'm glad they've found a way to make the property work. And again, they've been doing it over 5 years now, so they've got it going.
Yeah. Well, my next pick, I feel like I'm going to bore you with this pick because you've heard me call it out before. Traveling to Mars, number 7.
They're not there yet? Jeez, no kidding.
We're still not to Mars. And I will say that no book impacts me month in and month out like Traveling to Mars does. It makes me think. It makes me feel. It makes me, I feel like, become a better person reading this book. And that's high praise because this is a comic book. And The Flintstones was the book that got me on to, I can't even think of the writer's name right now.
Mark Russell.
Mark Russell. I didn't write it down. So I didn't. Yeah, Mark Russell, The Flintstones got me on to him. And that was a book that made me laugh and think. This is a book that makes you think and feel. And there is some comedy in there, but it's not the focal point. It's more about who we are as a society, who we are as people, what is worth living for, what's life about, things like that. So I feel like if you want to be a better person, read this comic. And then Roy, okay, this guy, Roy's the main character. He wants to speak with his ex-wife just because he wants to say he's sorry. You know, this is like we're going out of radio range. I'd like to do this. No one can find her. Civilization's collapsing back home. And it's just like he's getting to this weird place. You know, they put packages on the ship for him every day, you know, like little care packages to help him keep his sanity. And he's down to his last package as he's getting close to Mars. He's opening it up. And he does get a last chance to speak with his mom in this issue. But I mean, like, it tugs at the heartstrings. And I'm not like it's sappy, but just makes you really think, you know, like, what would I do? What's really important? Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
What makes people good and what makes you happy? That's what this book does.
Well, it's a good story if it can make you sit and reflect on those things. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, highly recommend it. If you haven't read it, you have to read it. Like I said, I think it makes you a better person.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. My next pick, and I think you got this one too, is Mech Cadets number 1 from Boom.
Yeah, I did get that. I loved the Mech Cadets when they first came out.
Mech Cadet U and stuff back in the day.
Yeah, Mech Cadet U. Yep.
And this seems to be set about a year after that.
Yeah, it's been so long since we read it, though.
Yeah, I don't even remember when that came out. It had to be a good couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I thought this was a good, fun read. It kind of reset the table. We got a little bit of a status quo change for a few things here and there. And it looks like we're not just being Earth-based, but we're going to see, it looks like a lot more aliens this time.
Yep.
And it definitely feels like there's a little something sinister going on with their leadership at the Sky Corps or Academy or wherever they're at.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
It was fun, and I was sitting there wondering when I was reading it. I was like, why in the hell are they coming back to Mech Cadets all of a sudden? Because I think it was honestly like 4 years ago.
At least. It was pre-pandemic, I think.
Yeah, pre-pandemic. At least 4 years. Could have been 5 years ago. And when Mech Cadets U came out. And then I came to find out, hey, there's a Netflix series coming out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's a coincidence.
So I was like, that's kind of cool because you and I both read the comic. I'm definitely going to watch the series because now I want to experience it and watch the show. So if you, I don't know, if you're a speculator, maybe this is something you want to speculate on. I don't know.
I'm curious where in the overall timeline, because we've got Mech Cadet U, and that again, that came out 4 or 5 years ago, but is only set about a year in the past of this story. Where on that timeline, or is it a parallel timeline that the Netflix animated show takes place?
Yeah, I agree. So I think I like Mech Cadet U more than Mech Cadets so far. You know, they're different books. One was focused on the one character kind of becoming a Mech Cadet.
Yeah.
And wanting to be in it. And I like that story more than we're already built up, you know. So I hope they start with just the one main character. Maybe season 2 is Mech Cadets, him already joined.
I may need to find the time to reread Mech Cadet U because, again, it's been ages. And I don't remember how many of these characters carry over from that versus Stanford Yu, who was the lead of the previous one.
Exactly. I remembered him, and there was like some vague. I'm like, this person seems some familiar, but 5 years ago, you know, like, good luck.
I think the other cadets with him were all there. I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I'll tell you, there was two books that I was debating on for my last pick. I was thinking about Mother Russia, which is a CEX book, is a zombie thing. That is very solid, but I'm going to go with something different. Big Game number 2. I called out Big Game number 1. Big Game number 2, Mark Millar, it's all of his properties. If you are a longtime reader of his, you'll like this book just because you get to see so many of the superheroes and villains that he has used in his properties.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1986, the heroes were kind of taken out and villains have been kind of ruling the world. And the stuff that you and I have been experiencing, this is kind of like the thing behind it, the plot, is, you know, heroes, we've almost forgotten about them. We just experience them through these movies and through comic books, but they used to be a real thing.
Yeah.
And so they're starting to pop up again. And by pop up again, you're thinking like the Kick, you know, Butt group and, you know, the vampires, you know, Hit Girl. Those are the new heroes popping up because they can't completely wipe them out. And so Nemesis in this book kind of takes on the ambassadors at one point. We get to see the Chrononauts in here, which I know you like the Chrononauts a lot.
Interesting. Okay.
So they're even in here. You get hints to the Nightclub, which is the new vampire book, how those characters will be playing out in the next thing. You also see almost like Hit Girl playing a big part in this. So I think if you like any of his characters, there's even been teases that Huck will be in here. you'll see them eventually one day. And it's kind of cool that that's happening in here. Like I said, it was a toss-up between this and like the Mother Russia book, which I also really love. But this one, I think if you're a longtime Millar reader, you'll love it because you get to see all those groups.
So clearly he's tying his whole library, not his whole, but the majority of his library all together with this.
Yep.
So definitely a little bit of universe building and a cross-continuity and certainly a crossover kind of a thing. Do you think he's ramping this up to the equivalent of a crisis-level event where it could reset stuff afterwards? Or is it just, hey, let's get everybody together, tell something, and then just they all go back and do their own things or, you know, whatever?
It's tough to say. I think he's trying to go the crisis route. Will he nail it? I don't know, but he's a writer that I trust to do it. And so I think he wanted to bring them all together, but some of the stuff that's happened in here, it almost pushes towards we have to do a reset type thing, or it's going to be a different looking universe going forward. I'll just leave it at that.
And both are viable, particularly when you've got Chrononauts who could do a reset sort of a deal.
Exactly. You have your reset switch, but you know, Chrononauts could be killed. Who knows?
True.
We don't know. We don't know how it's going to play out.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a fun read. It's just like, I think if you're a longtime reader of Mark Millar, you definitely want to read this title just because if you like the Chrononauts or if you like the new team, the Nightclub, or you like the Kick-A, which was a movie, you're going to get to experience them all. Nemesis, I really like Nemesis. Here you go. I'm just waiting to see how deep he goes into the library.
Has he brought in like the Magic Order or whatever?
He hasn't yet, but I would not doubt it.
But you don't bring it all in at once either. You layer it in. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, they're being doled out little by little. I'm waiting for like, you know, Jupiter's Legacy to come up too.
How long does this go for?
It's either 5 or 6 issues, and I think something big will happen at the end. I don't think he did this by mistake. I think he's setting it up to be his crisis. Or on a flip, it could be his old man Logan type thing. Look at this story, you know, this apocalyptic thing, and then we reset and the Chrononauts go back to the current time stream. Who knows? He could go either way.
He clearly has a game plan, though. He usually does, and it's usually pretty decent.
Exactly. I don't think he's just fooling around. He has a definitely something he wants to do, and he wants to show that these characters are bigger than their own title.
Yeah, and I can see that. And I can see wanting to go from having what seems like a dozen or more separate properties into there is a cohesive universe to be had.
Exactly. And there's so many characters. I mean, you got even the spy element, you know, with that book, the books that he's written.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many ways. I mean, you could almost have James Bond in here at a street level, you know, planning to take out Nemesis. Not James Bond, but I can't remember the King's something.
Kingsman,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Kingsman. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. If he brings all that in, that could be interesting.
It could just be really cool. So I'm hopeful for it and I'm enjoying it right now.
Cool. And then my last pick is going to be Star Trek Deep Space Nine, The Dogs of War, number 5.
Nice.
That concludes that miniseries. It landed the ending. It read very much like an episode of the show with the 5 in total and stuff. The characters were in character. It seemed like the sort of thing they potentially could have done on the show if they had really wanted to. So yeah, it was enjoyable because, again, we haven't seen new episodes of the show in ages.
Well, on the Star Wars front, just an FYI, I think I picked up the Star Trek Library Volume 2.
Cool.
So I'm getting the second volume of that library. I can't remember what's in it.
IDW has done a lot of good stuff for a lot of years, and it's varied between doing some stuff based on the movies, doing it on the original series, Next Gen, Deep Space Nine. Pretty sure they've done some of the Voyager and stuff. I think they even did the New Frontiers stuff for a miniseries or something, and that was something that was previously only in the novels.
Yeah. From my experience with what little I've read, it's almost like what Marvel's doing with Star Wars titles. It's like fleshing out the world and the stories between the movies and the TV series.
Yeah.
Things that they're leaving out, they kind of run with it and give you the full story, which makes it more enjoyable if you're invested in the stories and the movies, or I mean the TV shows and the movies.
And if you're into Star Trek, in addition to there being a number of shows on the air these days, the whole IDW library of Star Trek material is generally very good. DC had a really good run with it back in like the 80s and such, although there was some issues or problems with that in so much as writers wanted to do certain things. It got approved, and then the license holder says, yeah, we got cold feet, let's not do that. So certain storylines kind of started and stopped oddly, but it was still good. And then, of course, there's all the novels out there. So again, plenty of Star Trek to be had.
Yeah. By the way, I wanted to mention 3 things without giving you a review of them, just to let you know. First up, I kind of already told you, but I wanted the listeners to know in case you and I chat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Void Rivals, it is going to dip in and out of the Energon universe. That's a Robert Kirkman book, so it will bump into the Transformers from time to time. Or G.I. Joe, who knows?
And that makes sense. If you establish it of being in that world, there's ramifications of being in that world.
Yeah, so I think if you want to read all the Transformers stuff, you probably need to read Void Rivals too. And then the other one, Devil's Cut, came out, a new publisher, Distillery, and it was an anthology, and it was a magazine, and it was like an expensive one, and it was like 2 to 3 pages of every story, and I think the longest one had like 8 pages, and I enjoyed 2 of the stories, and the rest of them I was like, okay, 2 pages, I get nothing out of this. All right, Glorified previews, I did not like it at all, just because of what I got. And then one other one, I just wanted to say a thank you to, I think it was Nick Thixpicks, Nick Fenner, I think it is, because he called out Project Reese in a preview spotlight clip, which is from Mad Cave, and it's like a World War II type thing, like the gold train. And I picked it up, and although I wouldn't say it's A-plus material for me, it's more like the B-plus material, and I really did enjoy it. So thank you. Preview spotlight clips do help, because I picked it up, and I wouldn't have picked it up otherwise based on his pick.
Absolutely. There have been a number of things I've gotten that I would not have otherwise. So yeah, that's why I want more people submitting to those things.
Yeah, and I picked it up, and I would not have read it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So thank you, Nick.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was just an aside. But did you want to go on to the questions that we got?
Yeah, we got some questions this time. We got a couple from Dr. Mo. We'll start with those. And he had originally sent some questions in, like, right as we were recording last time. I didn't see him till afterwards. And we were going to go with those, but then I guess yesterday he's like, oh, let's take those out and let's put some newer ones in. So we'll go with those. First question, did the first month of the Fall of X storyline work for you? Can you please share which titles you read?
You want to answer first or you want me to answer?
I'll go. I mean, overall, I'm liking it. I mean, definitely they kicked over the table with the Hellfire Gala. And a lot of this is just kind of starting to clarify the new status quo and setting some stuff up. And it hasn't really progressed all that far. I mean, we've talked about a couple of issues like X-Men 25 where a ton happens, but it's still just at those beginning stages.
Yes. Yeah. I would say I think most of the books nailed it. The only one that, for me, didn't nail it in the Fall of X was Wolverine, out of the ones I got, because it was like tying into, it was like almost a crossover with Ghost Rider, I think, at that point, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, it's.
And I was just like, how does this tie into Fall of X? That made no sense. So I feel like in his old Wolverine / Ghost Rider story.
Hellverine, I think.
Hellverine! I was like, oh my God. This has nothing to do with Fall of X. So I think that was a bait and switch. That was not part of Fall of X.
I mean, for me, the X-Men Red stuff is certainly playing out aspects of Fall of X, but it's also probably my least favorite X book at the moment.
No, I understand. And we're different on, like I said, it's the political intrigue and the war that has me hooked.
Mm-hmm.
The characters themselves, I'm like, ugh, I'm ambivalent to. Except for Storm. That's the only character.
I think because I'm ambivalent to the characters, I don't care about the political or the war aspects.
Yeah!
So yeah, they can go kill themselves. What do I care? They're fictional characters.
Yeah. All right. Let me go through the checklist, because he was asking which titles we're getting. We're both getting Alpha Flight.
Yeah, which I thought was great.
You're getting Astonishing Iceman. I am not.
Okay.
And you liked it.
Yeah.
Children of the Vault, are you getting it?
I am getting it.
I'm getting it, and I liked it. I thought it was B-type material. Dark X-Men, did you get it?
I did not. I skipped that one. I considered skipping Children of the Vault, but I wound up getting it, which I don't remember why, because again, that's some of those characters, it's like, I'm not that intrigued by them.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's going to have a lot of Bishop and Cable-type stuff, I think, in it, and I may have gotten it on those counts.
Yep, yep. I didn't get the Dark X-Men either, so that one I am clueless on. I don't know if it's good. We both get Immortal X-Men, and I thought it was decent. Invincible Iron Man, I think we both really enjoyed, and we're both getting it.
Yeah.
Jean Grey, are you getting that?
I got that one, yeah.
Okay, I did not get that one. And then Realm of X, I did not get.
I got that one.
Did you like it?
Remember how I said I hadn't read everything?
Oh, okay, never mind. You might like it, we don't know.
Don't know yet.
Okay, Uncanny Avengers, I did get.
I got that one, haven't gotten to that one yet.
Okay, one that I did not get, Uncanny Spider-Man. Which is, oh, I can't think of his name.
Did that come out? Because I ordered that. I don't have that on my list.
Well, it's on the Fall of X checklist, but I didn't get it, so I don't know.
I don't think it came out yet.
Okay, well, maybe it'll be coming out this next
month. Because I definitely got that, because that's Nightcrawler.
Yeah, I did not get the Nightcrawler book, and why, I don't know. So, anyways, I missed it. We're both getting Wolverine. That was the one I didn't like. X-Force, we're both getting, I'm pretty sure. I think X-Men, X-Men Red, we're both getting. So that gives you a rundown of what we're getting.
Yeah, fair number of titles. And there's a few other mutant books of X-Men Days of Future Past, Doomsday, Storm still got her thing. There's a lot of stuff, but Fall of X, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, question number two.
What are your thoughts on the third issue of Ultimate Invasion?
Thoughts on Ultimate Invasion. I wrote down my thoughts because I can't remember my thoughts right now. You can go ahead and give them your thoughts.
I'm enjoying it. I think it's some fun world building.
I'm remembering my thoughts now.
It's not really the direction I thought they were going because I was thinking we'd get a little bit more of the Ultimate Universe actually like invading the main universe and they're just kind of off in their other world.
Yep.
I'm liking it. Hickman, Hitch, a great creative team. I don't know if I'm going to follow the Ultimate Universe moving forward or not. I'm probably going to sample the new Ultimate Universe title, but it really depends. Do they land the ending on this? Do they kick that off in an interesting direction? And is it going to be self-contained? Is it going to bounce against the 616 universe? And I don't know what answer to that would be the better answer for me, is the funny thing.
Yeah, I did enjoy issue 3, but I didn't love it. And for me, it's like the characters are so different. And we weren't really introduced. They were just there, you know,
yeah.
Like that Gray Hulk, you know, and all the characters. You're just like, who's this? Who's this? And it's almost like being on a Racco. You don't feel any love for the characters yet. And I think it might have worked better if we would have seen an origin to the characters, which maybe they'll do that when they have new books. I don't know. But right now, I just feel off kilter. And like, I like the world building. I do like the world building, but I don't feel a love for the characters and the world other than the Maker, which I really like him.
Well, and they're setting up a dynamic there on how there's almost a round robin aspect to something.
Yep.
But we're just told that.
Yes. We haven't seen it.
Yeah. And I think the next issue is going to be a potential pivot point based on where they left a couple of characters. And again, to your point, a lot of these characters are just, isn't this cool that they look this way or are this way? And we haven't really spent enough time with them to get to know them.
Yeah. We don't like
how
them.
They got that way.
Yeah. You just can't like them when you see a character. You have to learn to know them before you like them. So I'm at that weird place where I feel like I don't know anyone.
I think they've had some intriguing concepts and some very different takes on some characters, but I can't call myself a real fan of the character until I've seen them do some stuff versus sit in a room and talk.
Yeah. The sad story behind this book, this was not supposed to be a Jonathan Hickman book. It was supposed to be a Donny Cates book. And Donny Cates got into that car accident that we all know and can't remember even writing any of the stories he wrote before. So he probably had a really cool story thought up for this, and what that story is, we'll never know. He may never know. I hope he gets better because he was an amazing writer. But mm-hmm. I mean, Hickman, I guess, kind of just picked this up and ran with it. But I think that's why it feels a little different than a normal Hickman book for me.
That makes sense. It may have just been he got in late in the game of I can run with something, but it's not going to be as fully baked or something.
Yeah, that because it feels like Hickman light, like he's thought it through, but it just doesn't feel as epic as normal Hickman for me.
Epic or layered, yeah.
Yeah, layered, yeah, exactly. So that's where I am. I like it, but I don't love it.
Going on to the third question, he's also doing the Gods title.
Yeah, Gods.
And the question is, are we planning on getting that?
Are you planning? I can tell you what I'm going to do.
I've pre-ordered the first one.
I have too. I am definitely getting it. I mean, Jonathan Hickman for me is, there are several top-tier writers. There's a lot of them that I really like. He is one of my top-tier writers. And if he's writing it, I'm always getting it. So you don't even need to ask me, Dr. Moe. Just say Jonathan Hickman, James bought it. I mean, this is beyond the Marvel and DC stuff that he's done. And he has written at DC before. He's done Black Monday Murders, which I love. East of West, which I loved. Manhattan Projects. Decorum was probably his weakest one from Image that I didn't like. So he's a heavy hitter in the indie world and at Marvel and DC. And especially at Marvel, if he's writing it, I am always buying it.
I'm curious about it. I think it benefited them to do a couple of preview pages in the Marvel previews.
Yeah.
Again, beautiful art. The story was good. And I'm like, sure, I'll check this out, see where it goes.
Yeah. This is, as you can tell, he's one of my favorite writers.
Understandable. He does some great stuff.
Yeah. So needless to say, if you say, are you getting it? Hell yeah, I'm getting it.
And then Dr. Moe's final question. What does DC Comics need to do in order to get you reengaged after the 2-month break due to Night Terrors?
Yes. What an excellent and timely question. Okay, I feel like I'm in a better headspace. I was very stressed out the other day when I wrote that. I was in a continuing education class for 8 hours. It was horrible.
Mm.
But okay, The reason why it hit me so much with Shazam is Mark Waid is a writer that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Shazam is a book I was enjoying. And you could say that about Green Arrow. I was really enjoying that. You could say it about Green Lantern. I was really enjoying that. And so we came up with this event that sidelined all those books. And, you know, we postulate, we don't know, maybe they're trying to catch up. But then I realized every one of those writers was writing a Night Terrors book. So they weren't behind. Maybe the artists were, I don't know. But we kind of put these books over there, pushed them aside. And we are coming back to them, issue 3 with Green Arrow and Green Lantern. And then with same thing with Shazam. And they're just picking up like we never left it. Like it's literally been a month since I got that last issue. And I have not gotten the Green Arrow and Green Lantern yet, but I did get the Shazam, and I felt myself a little bit lost. And is that on the editor? Is it on the writer? I feel like it's on the writer, but then maybe the editor should have told the writer, maybe you need to put something in here.
Well, I think this is not even at the editor level to a certain degree, because I have two different answers, but I'm going to give a third to this right now. I think it's almost on the executive editor, the creative director, all that. In other words, the highest echelon of editorial that allowed for Night Terrors to happen at all, and to do it particularly on a couple of titles that were like 2 months, 3 months in.
Yeah.
So you're chopping some miniseries in half with a lengthy break. And there's no good answer to this, because even if everything had come to a nice close, everything was between arcs, then we do 2 months, and then we come back, it's then going to be, well, where did the last arc leave off, and where are we going with this? A two-month break in almost all of your ongoing titles is a bad idea.
It's a really bad idea.
It's not something that's on the editors, and I think by the time the writers found out about it, it was probably too late to do anything.
Yeah. This definitely came about from on high. I don't think Joshua Williamson hijacked all the books.
I don't think he's got that kind of juice.
I don't either. And so it may, you know, like we had a question because I was had my rant. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And the reason why it hurt me is because I love the book and I love the writer and I want to love the book mm-hmm. more. And it's frustrating because I'm reading, I'm like, what's going on? And you never want to feel frustrated with something you are enjoying. And so I'm like, okay, here's my thoughts. One, I can stack up my books and wait and read them like a trade. But then why am I going to do that? I could read DC Infinite Ultra and pay a very little money and get the comics 1 month later and let them stack up in there. I'm buying the single issue comics to stay current because I want to know what's going on. That's why I read them as they come out. That's just me. And I want to be able to talk with people who like comics and know what the heck I'm talking about. And so that's why I read them when they come out. That's just a me thing. So I'm like, I don't want to stack up my comics. So, okay, fine. Then writer, you better tell me what's going on. You better remind me if you took 5 months to release your issue. But if they're not going to do that, I got to have somebody recap and tell me what's going on. And I know that's a writing crutch, but they're not doing it. And if they're not doing it, I almost feel like, why am I buying single issue comics? If the writer, I can't trust, that's like a fantasy land where the writer's always going to tell us what's going on. And when I say fantasy land, it's really the 1980s when they did that.
Well, I was going to say, it's not fantasy. It's been done.
It's been done, but they're not doing it today.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, and it feels like they're not going to go back. So I'm like, please give me a recap. Give me something or help me. Give me a crutch. I need a crutch or I'm going to die here. Fine. And I'm being dramatic, you know, when I say I'm going to die.
No, but I get it. I get it because it's interesting because I'm in the process of a little bit of an experiment with my reading where I've taken some of the indie titles like Astrobots, Ancient Enemies, and I am letting those stack up.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that works out for me or not, because there's going to come a point where, okay, final issue comes out. Do I get to it immediately? Do they sit around for a bit as I catch up on another reading? Don't know. But to your point of like with DC and stuff, it's stupid to do that to a degree financially on the monthly books with DC Infinite Ultra, because, you know, by the time you've waited the month, it's all there. But for me, the short answer is, what can DC do in order to get me reengaged? I'm like, time travel and not do Night Terrors?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, please don't do that.
I mean, again, as I was saying, it's a really big bump in the road to put into all of your titles, and particularly a few that barely had built up any story momentum, and to just knock it down and derail it that way is unbelievable, and I don't understand how that was allowed to happen. But to me, the simple answer, and the right answer, pardon the pun, is to write more accessible stories.
Yes.
Every issue should be trying to re-engage me in the story, but most writers don't make that effort, and they should. It's to their best interest. It keeps the people engaged. It keeps them on the title. It keeps the sales up. It keeps them employed. It's to the editor's interest because it keeps people engaged. You can keep the same writer. You don't got to go hire somebody new. You don't got to figure out a new title because this one's failing. You know, it's not crazy hard to do. A lot of it is just start with little things, like make sure you name every character in the course of the issue, preferably near the beginning, so we know who the hell they are.
Yeah.
And then there are ways to gracefully reset the scene, remind us where things are at, and stuff like that. I mean, with Shazam, if Freddy had just been telling Billy, you know, do you think Shazam's going to go nuts when you power up again? You know, because he was acting kind of weird before. And a line or two of dialogue like that would be, oh yeah, I remember, or gosh, I haven't picked up the book before. That's why he doesn't want to be Shazam. I get it.
Exactly. That would have been the trigger. You'd be like, oh yeah, they could have even drawn a flashback. Oh yeah, I remember that. Oh, boom. And then my mind would have gone there. But that's the accessible writing thing. And Mark Waid is a good writer. I know he can do that. So please, Mark, help me out.
Well, and this is one of the reasons I was saying a month or two back when the Titans series started up, actually probably 4 or 5 now, because 2 months for Night Terrors, of they should have added another character. Because then that character would have been an excuse of, well, why is it this way? What's going on? Tell me about this. And give a reason for some legitimate exposition.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was really unfortunate. I think it was, in my opinion, it's a failed experiment because I looked at some of the Night Terrors books for free. I bought the main story. The main story, I did not like it. I just flipped through them to see the writers who are writing the stuff that I used to write or used to read. And I was just like, it doesn't really have anything to do with their story, which is fine. It doesn't kill your story momentum other than you don't get to read the title for 3 months. And so I'm hoping that Green Arrow and Green Lantern do some flashback type thing or some kind of trigger to remind me. Because I was enjoying those books, and it would just be really unfortunate if I was reading a book, and this happens a lot in the indie world. I haven't done it too much with Marvel and DC, but I could start doing it just to almost be like, you guys can't keep doing this to me. It'd just be like, okay, you've lost me. I'm 4 or 5 issues in. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm out. Done. And I don't want to do that, but I've done it with indie books, and I'm at the point where I'm like, I'll do it with a Marvel or DC book, because then I feel like I don't want to be frustrated in my hobby. I want to enjoy my hobby. And I'm not going to do work to enjoy myself.
Well, and to me, it's a matter of if you're a professional writer, there's certain table stakes I expect.
Yeah.
And if you're telling a serialized story, I mean, I should be reminded of past events enough to, oh yeah, I got it. I'm not expecting you to regurgitate everything with like they used to do in older comics.
Oh, yeah.
The first page or two is everything you missed in the previous issue.
Yep.
I'm not expecting that much, but I am expecting more than just everything starting in the middle of the action as if I have memorized the full run of the series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they can and should do better.
I agree, and I'm hoping for better things, and I hope my frustration goes away. I was just really frustrated that day, and I think it's because of the love for the writer and the love for the book I was reading, and it's just frustration that comes out.
Well, yeah, when they've bounced a title out of whack and stuff through no fault of the creative team, it's silly.
Yeah. Honestly, if I wouldn't have cared about the title that much, I probably just would have cut it and wouldn't have said a word. And I would have been done.
What's interesting is some titles like the Superboy Man of Tomorrow and Hawkgirl and stuff continued through Night Terrors.
Yeah.
So some books got a reprieve and whatnot. I don't know if it's a show of faith or a show of lack of faith, but either way, interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So anyways, good questions from Dr. Mo. I'm glad he brought it up. And man, I wish he wouldn't have deleted his old questions. Now I'm curious what they were.
I think it was what we thought of some of the books last month.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. Thanks.
Because one or two of them was, yeah, we wound up talking about it anyways, I think.
Yeah. Well, thanks for deleting those. I wouldn't have remembered by now.
And you guys don't need to wait till the last minute to send in questions.
Yeah. That being said, we probably won't have any questions for a little while.
Yeah, let's talk about some scheduling stuff real quick.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's going on with the preview spotlight. We'll start with that. The next deadline for sending in clips, I've got some scheduling stuff coming on, crazy busy and stuff. So the next deadline is going to be December 9th, and I'm recording this on September 12th. The deadlines for the September, October, and November previews were all September 9th, so we just passed that, so you missed them, sorry. But I did that so I can work ahead. The podcast is going to come out each and every week like it has been since August 2007. But again, next time to get preview spotlight clips is December 9th. And if there's something crazy good in the October-November previews and you want to slip it in there, I can probably make that happen. Or maybe we'll do a bonus episode for things we missed or whatever. But we've got the on-ramps episode in October for the preview spotlight, collected editions in November. It's all good. But because I'm going to be kind of busy and stuff, monthly comic spotlight is going to be a little interesting. This was your last chance to get in questions for a bit. I was thinking about saying, well, since y'all need last-minute questions, I thought I'd give you more time by holding off the recording of the next monthly comic spotlight for a couple of months to give you a lot of time to get the questions in. That's not why I'm doing it, but we are holding off the recording of that. So the same scheduling things that led to the theme preview spotlights for the next 2 months are going to mean that the next monthly comic spotlight covering September, we're probably not going to, definitely not going to record that until after Thanksgiving, probably shortly after Thanksgiving. But then after that, we'll be doing monthly comic spotlights on probably an every other week basis for a few weeks just to kind of get caught back up. And it may depend how quickly I can get some reading done. But you've got plenty of time to get in questions for the next Q&A episode. But again, don't wait till the last minute, because like once that next Q&A episode's released, you may only have a week, if that, maybe just a day or two before we record the next one. So my advice, if you have questions of, wow, this is a great story, I wonder what John and James think about it, or what about this other item, or whatever, post it on the forum as soon as you think of them. I can harvest them fairly easily. Be aware, particularly for the next few months, please avoid spoilers in the questions, because I will almost certainly be reading the questions before the comics the questions are about. Because we have had a question a few months ago where, what did you think of this? And I'm like, well, I hadn't read the comic yet. Now I knew going in. You know, does change the reading experience.
Yeah, I found out about Miss Marvel's death on the Slack channel.
Yeah.
In the general.
I am against spoilers. I hate stealing a comic's thunder, a book's thunder, or a show's thunder, which I will admit is ironic since one of the last episodes to go up as I record this was all about how I told my sister what was going to happen in a TV show before we watched it, but there's a whole story on that.
All right.
So if you haven't listened to the second episode we did on the third season of Superman and Lois, that's where the answer to that question is. But yeah, we love having questions. Sometimes we get enough to do it as a separate Q&A episode. Sometimes we don't. I'll figure out for this one if it'll be a separate episode or not when I do the editing. But again, when we get them like less than 24 hours before we record, it doesn't give us a whole lot of time to kind of think about the answers and such.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I want to mention in terms of scheduling and stuff, and this is part of why I'm a little busy this week, there is an upcoming convention spotlight episodes, and I say episodes plural. I realized there was going to be a convention here in Austin, Texas, where I live. We applied for press badges. Initially, we didn't get them. I asked kind of why, because the email really seemed like it was just either a clerical error or a bad computer system, because it's like, we regret to inform you, you're not getting a badge because you're not getting a badge. And I'm like,
what?
Huh? So we wound up getting press badges, went to it, had a great time. This was our first in-person convention experience in nearly 4 years, since I think the last show that had happened in Austin in person. Also, our first convention during the dual writer and actor strikes. So it was a bit of a different convention in some regards, because the actors couldn't talk about some of their shows and stuff. But we went, it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday convention, went, came back to my place, had dinner, and then recorded about it. And the first night we talked, I don't know, for an hour and 15 minutes. Second night we talked for about an hour and a half. The next night we talked for about an hour, almost 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours, that one. So it was enough content, even when it boiled down after editing, that next week, after this is released, is going to be GalaxyCon week, effectively.
Very cool.
There's going to be an episode Monday, Wednesday, Friday about the convention. Again, we had a fun time, some great stuff. Hopefully y'all will enjoy all that.
I'm looking forward to it, because like you told me you had gone before you recorded this, and I know you guys had a good time, but I just want to hear about it, because you're back in the convention scene since the first time since the pandemic.
Yeah, first in person. We did do Comic-Con at home, but that doesn't really count.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The virtual stuff's definitely not the same.
But yeah, part of what I've been busy with, because it's funny, that was Labor Day weekend, and I was thinking, I'll have time to do some podcast editing and stuff, and then I'm just generating more content. But I've been working ahead for a while, and we will have the regular Monday, Friday episodes throughout October and November, hopefully without fail. There's still a few I've got to edit. All of them I've got to post, but unless I really mess up, everything should happen like clockwork, and you should be none the wiser that I'm doing other stuff. But yeah, I've got it all planned out. We'll have, again, the preview spotlight in the middle of October for the on-ramps. We'll have another one in the middle of November for the collected editions. December, we'll be back to our regular programming on that with just, hey, what's in the current catalog and such. And we'll also have Warlord Spotlight, Back Issue Spotlight, I think, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Actually, in that point, we're mainly going to have Warlord Spotlights, Legion Spotlights, Astro City Spotlights. I don't know if we actually have a Back Issue Spotlight in that mix.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's mostly Astro City and Warlord.
It's Astro City and Warlord and Legion stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting to where, I mean, we're doing some of... I'm considering Warlord Spotlights, Legion Spotlights, and Astro City Spotlights as kind of a subcategory of the Back Issue Spotlights. So they're kind of sort of are and aren't those. I'm enjoying kind of those long haul runs and stuff like that.
Honestly, I'm enjoying them a lot too. I feel like I get a little bit more appreciation for the title when we do the long haul on it. It's been fun.
Yeah, yeah. And then I've got some other movie and TV type episodes going up too. So yeah. Should have plenty of content for everybody while I'm busy doing other stuff.
Well, I hope you have a good time being busy, and thank you for all your hard work. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. Now, preview spotlight 193 for the December solicitations, we're going back to the regular format. Those are going to be due 9 a.m. December 9th, the second Saturday of December. And again, regular naming convention, pick something out of the current catalogs, etc. For that one, if there's something from October, November you just feel people have to know about, we could probably squeeze those in too. Just be sure to tell people that it's from one of the previous months.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.